The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
All right, Pastor Mark Femmel is here, Zion Lutheran Church, Maryland Heights. He's our guest. Some of you guys tell me you feel like victims sometimes when you do ask the pastor. You don't feel victimized, do you, Pastor?
Not by you, Chuck. It's always a privilege.
Besides, you could beat me up in like 5 seconds.
But you've got more friends.
Pastor Femmel, look, he kind of looks like a tight end. He's taller than I am, stronger than I am, younger than I am. So I'm going to be very careful today with Pastor Femmel. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well.
You got an event coming up this weekend, you told me?
Yeah, we actually have a turkey dinner, kind of an early Thanksgiving. And we have a whole bunch of turkeys, a whole bunch of side dishes. It's going to be right after our late service.
Yeah.
And you get to hang out with me and ask all the questions that don't make it onto the air and see our people and just fill up with Thanksgiving early.
Going to have some gravy?
Of course.
Can I have some mashed potatoes or something with that?
Absolutely. I'm actually looking forward to the sweet potato casserole.
Sweet potato. That's going to be my next. That's going to be my next question. You got to have some sweet potatoes in there. Not for me. That'd be for my wife. I'm not a big sweet potato fan, but.
What's wrong with you?
I have something wrong with me. I don't know.
I cannot get enough of sweet potatoes. I love sweet potato casserole. Well, I don't love it. I love Jesus. I really enjoy sweet potato casserole. Sweet potato fries. Baked sweet potatoes, mashed sweet potatoes. Oh, my goodness. They're great.
You love the yam, don't you? All right. Well, you ready to get busy here?
We're ready.
All right. I have a story here. I've been holding on to this for a while.
And then you pulled it out on me. Huh?
Yeah. Well, I was kind of looking for a young pastor. You're not, what? You're 30 now? Is that what you are?
31.
31.
I'm well into my 30s.
Oh. Here's what the story says. Young Americans today are more skeptical and resistant to Christianity than were people of the same age just a decade ago, according to a new study. Negative perceptions toward the Christian faith have outweighed the positive as a growing percentage of younger Americans, a growing percentage of younger Americans associate with a faith outside Christianity. Only 16% of non-Christians aged 16 to 29 years old said they have a good impression of Christianity, according to a report released by the Barna Group. Just 10 years ago, the vast majority of Americans outside the Christian faith, including young people, felt favorably toward Christianity's role in society. Young people have an even lesser positive impression of evangelicals. Only 3% of 16 to 29-year-olds who are not of the Christian faith express favorable views of evangelicals. In the previous generation, 25% of young people had positive associations toward evangelicals. What do you make of that report?
Yeah, I think it's a big deal when your parents are Christian and they don't really live out the role. They don't really live out the life. And
does that really happen?
Does it ever not happen? And you get parents who constantly mess up and constantly fail, but There's a lot of parents out there who they pass on the faith as something that's just a Sunday morning obligation that you get up and you get out of bed and you go to church and that's it. And this is what it means to be a Christian. Then you go on to a regular life. You never pray before meals. You don't have family devotions. You don't talk about the faith. When you have the sex talk, you say, well, you just don't have sex because I said so, not before marriage. As opposed to, man, if you have sex with somebody before you get married, imagine all the things. Not just germs and diseases, but all the things and complications and psychological and relationship problems that you're pulling into that bed when you do get married. You know, you just get people who rebel against their parents because it's just one of those things like their parents do. You know, their parents don't speed, so, well, that's dumb. You know, they just kind of lump Christianity with everything else that they rebel against their parents for.
So you, Mr. 31-year-old pastor, are pretty much blaming me the middle-aged broadcaster here for all these bad results in this Barna survey? Is that what you're doing there?
Well, of course. I'm young. It's not my fault.
Well, I'm old. It's not my fault. So I guess it's nobody's fault. But we still got a deteriorating situation.
Yeah, we do. You know, a lot of, there's this really good book called Unchristian. And I don't remember who wrote it. It might have been Barna. But I'm sorry. It was written by an assistant of Barna, someone who worked with him a lot, Unchristian, great book, and it talks about how people who are not Christian perceive Christians, and I mean, it's all hate and over-politicization, you know, so you talk about the hot-button topics like abortion or homosexuality, and immediately people remember, you know, these abortion-bombing clinics, they remember this, what is the Westboro Baptist Church, and all these people who just jump way off the deep end, and aren't even living the love of Christ, or even the even anything resembling Christ. And these people get the publicity. And a lot of times, if you're not Christian, you're not going to get the benefit of the doubt. Or even take the time to say, is this a good perception?
Well, you know, the religious life of a Christian, it has a kind of a rhythm to it. Certainly, you're going to have those two big moments in your annual cycle of living the religious life. You're going to go through the Christmas part of the cycle. You're going to go through the Easter part of the cycle. And after a while, you just kind of fall into that rhythm, and you do that business, and it becomes kind of separate from the other rhythm of your life, whether it's your job or your home or whatever it is. You can actually kind of keep those two separate. I know that's what you're talking about. Then young people grow up. And they say, boy, mom and dad's home cycle and job cycle doesn't really match their church cycle very well. That seems kind of hypocritical to me. And then they're put in a position where they got to make a decision whether or not to incorporate their own church cycle or not. In the last 20 years or so, the culture has gotten involved in this debate, and has worked in some cases over time to demonize Christian people for being hypocrites or being those intransigent people who, you know, are against women's rights, women's freedoms, or against homosexual, gay rights. You know, they're just the skunks at the picnic. And they've been demonizing for a while. And it looks to me like they're succeeding. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, you know, media and modern and people who are sensationalist, you know, you always attack the institutions. And when the majority of the people are Christian or, you know, show up on Christmas and Easter, that's the institution to attack, you know. And, you know, but I will say, you know, Christians are not, you know, outside of the realm of blame. It's our job to manage how people perceive us individually as Christians. You know, and when somebody talks about, you know, whatever the hot topic of the issue is, sometimes they don't understand why the faith is against something, not seeing that there's a really good reason. But for them, it's just enough to say, no, that's wrong and that's bad. And they, be in a sense, demonize ourselves. With our youth group, one of the things that we did is we got them all together and we talked about the ways that people perceive Christians. And I said, now if everybody perceives us as judgmental, hypocritical, always, you know, always having the right answer, and always out for money and all these things, who in their right mind would want to be like us? You know, and on top of that, the only payoff that a lot of times Christians are content to talk about is after you die, as if Jesus has nothing to do with this world. You know, but last time I checked, you know, I heard earlier in the Bible study that Jesus died on the cross. But I hope you're going to talk about how he comes back from the dead, too. Because last time I checked, he came back.
That's coming up.
Yeah.
We got to get to Matthew 28, though, before then. We're all in good time.
Can we talk about it yet, then?
You can talk about it right now anytime you want.
Well, say he comes back from the dead into this world where we are. He has a physical body again. He always had one, but, you know, since he took it on at the incarnation at Christmas, but... Or I guess at conception, but he's right here with us. He's right here taking care of us, watching over us, being with us. So, yeah.
All of that true, granted, all of that is true. But I think that may not be the problem. I don't think Christians maybe are talking about after death very much at all. Christians seem to be talking about how you can use the Bible, how can you use Christianity or religion or faith to shape your own life in kind of the direction and the look that you want it to have. As a matter of fact, it seems to me there's so much focus on Christianity in its usefulness that I think there's some people who don't even spend much time, I'm talking about people who are looking in maybe from the outside, like the people in the survey, they don't hear us talking about heaven or eternal life very much at all, it seems to me. Maybe I've got it wrong. How do you see it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of people who try to distill the Bible and say, well, you know, if you manage your money well, then, you know, you'll have more money when you retire. Oh, and hey, look, I found a verse from Proverbs 15 that verifies that I can kind of, you know, fit to mold that shape. And, you know, every time somebody does something wrong, they're usually doing something wrong for the right reasons. So a lot of these people with this prosperity gospel saying, you know, you give Jesus $1,000 and he'll give you five tomorrow or something or down the road. And they're trying to show that Jesus has an impact in this world right now. But then they kind of dumb it down to, hey, here's the manual for investment strategies. And the Bible isn't like that at all. But I think we also have to be careful to say that, you know, we look at the Bible for its usefulness. We also have to be careful not to say, well, that's the wrong thing. We should look at the Bible for its uselessness. Look how useless this book is. Don't you want it?
The survey here, the study, seems to suggest that among young people, this is a worsening, a deteriorating situation. So that must mean that the young people who are in your youth group at Zion are probably being influenced at school by friends, being pulled away from church. Now, it seems to me that if you got a 60-year-old pastor who's trying to deal with the youth group and fight that tendency, that's going to be quite a challenge. But if you're 31, you're not that much older than the kids in the youth group, you might have an advantage. You know, you might be in a position to speak to them in a way they will listen that maybe I couldn't or a pastor my age couldn't. Is that a correct assumption? Do you think you have an advantage?
Well, default, I suppose, yeah. But you know, if my life took a different course and I was called to be a missionary in, you know, Eastern Europe, I think differently than Eastern Europeans. But once you spend time in the culture, if you truly spend time in the culture and really try to work at it, you can always get better. But if there's really a disconnect in which you just cannot talk to the youth, well then, you know, you're not Jesus. You don't have to do everything. You know, an option would be to find somebody in the congregation that is more in that age range that's really tracking with you and really clicking with you, and then lift them up to be a youth servant or help you out with Bible studies, or I don't know, send them to the seminary, be a pastor or something.
You know, for many folks, whether they're clergymen or whether they're lay people, they get into a kind of religious rhythm in their Christian life. It can be a very God-pleasing thing, but that rhythm becomes established, and it's kind of the way you approach your Christianity and your living in your 20s, in your 30s, in your 40s, your 50s. And then up pops a challenge like this. Barna reports that only 3% of people, young people who don't call themselves Christians, have just a favorable view toward evangelical Christians. Well, I'm not going to let that disrupt my rhythm. I'm pretty comfortable in, you know, Advent, Christmas, Epiphany, Lent, Easter, Pentecost, let's do it all over again kind of a thing. And I become oblivious to these kinds of challenges. This study suggests that perhaps we ought to even be alarmed. Are you alarmed, Pastor?
No, you know, with Advent starting up again, it's going to be pretty comfortable, Advent, and then you know, Christmas season. I can't wait to put on my blue for Advent, you know, and some white for Christmas.
See, I see you've got that rhythm going.
Yeah, and it's alarming. You know, the kids in our my youth group, I don't suspect any of them are doing black tar heroin. The kids who generally do black tar heroin don't hang around churches. But I just heard that there's I just heard that there's black tar heroin in the high school just around the corner from our church. And so even though
black tar heroin,
I haven't Wikipedia'd it yet.
Okay,
which is now a verb.
But it's
a Wikipedia something.
A form of heroin you can carry around in the high school?
Well, I don't think it's like, you know, legal.
Wow,
it's not like school policy.
Yeah.
But apparently, if for something to have something...
That's pretty alarming.
Like an adjective like black tar, you can tell it's even worse than regular heroin, which we all know is bad. You know, so for a parent who's got their kids in a school where black tar heroin is it enough for them to be happy that their kid's not on black tar heroin? Well, no. The people who are on black tar heroin or have no problem doing it are probably going to be proponents of doing marijuana and other drugs that are not as life-destructive as quick as anyway. And, you know, so regardless of whether it's your problem or not, it is your problem. Because, you know, one of the Bible studies that we're talking about right now at church is talking about biblical sexuality, Sunday morning Bible study, and various topics have come up, cohabitation, which are two people living together before they get married, homosexuality, internet pornography, and all sorts of things, self-control, all sorts of things. And a number of people have told me, well, that just doesn't apply to me. And, you know, my children aren't going to wrestle with that. And actually, they are. 50% of guys struggle with internet
pornography. Parents are telling you that?
Yeah, parents have told me that.
You'll forgive me, parents out there, but... Are you really that naive? Can you be that naive?
Barna did some sort of research on this, and I can't remember the specific statistic, but it's something like 80% of kids over 12 or 13 have seen internet pornography. And it's like, okay, fine, so they don't see it at your house. Are they always at your house, or are they ever going over to see friends' houses? Could friends print stuff off? Could friends download something to their phone? You know, it's... Satan is so creative, and just because... You know, it's like the Germans and the French in World War II. They had that Maginot Line, remember?
Mm-hmm.
The Maginot Line, where mm-hmm. they had all these fortifications. They were totally ready for a direct assault from Germany. So Germany just walks around it, which, you know, was bad. But it's an important lesson in that, well, however you fortify it, Satan's not stupid. He'll find another way.
So are you motivated by any of this, Pastor? You've got a youth group. How many kids you got in your youth group?
We have, you know, it depends on what we're doing. If we're studying
right.
the Bible, you know.
Right.
But if we're having a fun event, we could have up to like 10 or 15 people that are involved in like some of the fun events.
15 kids that you're shepherding, that you have a chance to touch, influence, and you know, based on this study, what's going on. Not only are there people who don't want what you have, but this study seems to suggest that there are people who like you less just because you have it, whether they know you or not. They take a dim view of you, and your kids run the risk of being very uncool by hanging out with you. Now, do you just stay safe in your church rhythm, your annual tradition, and leave the rest up to the Holy Spirit, or are you motivated to take it head on, or how do you handle it?
Oh, I never back down from a fight. I thrive on conflict and fights. It's my opportunity to hold up
You're
Jesus
a warrior.
And let people see it. Oh, I love it. That's why I didn't play football. It wasn't competitive enough. I did martial arts and weightlifting.
I did weightlifting
to be a better fighter.
I don't think most folks are like that.
But see, that's because I am convinced that no matter who is competing with Jesus, if you are competing with Jesus, you lose. You just have to take a closer look at the conflict, no matter what it is. I am convinced Jesus will always win, and I've yet to be defeated on that premise. It's not because I'm a good arguer. I'm convinced evidence is evidence, and
well,
I tell
Jesus
people,
may win, but that doesn't mean that one of your kids, God forbid,
mm-hmm.
might not have tried black tar heroin by this time next
right.
year.
Well, and that's the deal. You know, people say, you know, that's faith is faith, you know, and it is, and faith is critical. But one of the dangerous things is to be content with blind faith. So with our youth group, the last time we talked about, Well, I guess 2 times ago we talked about Halloween, because Halloween was coming up, middle of October. Halloween was coming up. So I said, you know, what sort of things do we know about Halloween? You know, let's talk about it. So, you know, some people said there's, you know, it's like the devil's holiday, and it's when all the evil spirits run around. We talked about all this stuff, and, you know, it's also the time where people walk around and get candy, you know, and they dress up as clowns. And we started talking about the good stuff and the bad stuff, and we listened to some Halloween songs that are being sold to kids. And one of them was like the Monster Mash, which is completely harmless. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a bunch of monsters dancing around fine. Except for Dracula, he was sad about losing his Transylvania twist. Mm-hmm. That's okay. But then we started listening to some other songs, and there was a song that was on the Skid City, Candy. You remember that song? I Want Candy.
Yeah.
And I said,
vaguely,
when kids listen to this, they're thinking, I want candy. Yay, this is great. And then they ignore the rest of it. But it's actually, on the CD, a girl singing about wanting a girl named Candy, and talking about all the things that that means.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an appropriate thing to do for Halloween? No, not so much. There's another song about the, and it's an old song, it's the Witch Doctor. I call the Witch Doctor, he told me what to do. You remember that song?
Sure.
Yep. And you listen to this song, and this guy is invoking demons to help him get this girl to be interested.
Oh, that's not in there.
Well, it is. That's why he's using the spell from a witch doctor, and it's a witch doctor. It's not like the local magician or like a, you know, just some sort of like a secret code. It's a witch doctor, and witch doctors, you talk to anybody from Africa, witch doctors invoke demons. Now, is it saying, let us invoke demons and cause this person, you know, no, of course not. But the point is this guy says some things, says the ooh, ee, ooh, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the girl is immediately going to fall in love with him. Well, you know, isn't that called rape? Except, you know, instead of just raping her once, it's every day she wakes up and is in love with you. And so I said, you know, this is easy. This is like candy. You know, you eat it and it's fun, it's exciting, it's easy to sing, and it's easy to like. But, I mean, what is he really talking about?
Now, Pastor, you're not a square, are you? You found objectionable stuff in Walla Walla Ting Bang or whatever that was. That's harmless stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, the devil's in the details, isn't he? It seems absolutely harmless. I sound like a square, but see, this is my point. If we just say, don't listen to any songs about Witch Doctor, well, then our kids are going to go out and go, these songs are really fun. Man, the faith is irrelevant. But instead, we kind of talked about it, and we thought our way through that song and said, you know, this is something that we really ought to listen to. And I said, are we forced to listen to this because there are no other good, like, options in Halloween songs? And I said, this isn't like you hear the song and, you know, the DJ's music, and then you, like, walk out and go home and, you know, watch TV or something. But, you know, I said, you know, as Christians, you know, we're smarter. We should be smart enough to get dumbed into stuff like this. So we talked about costumes. And I said, there are some costumes that you can wear and some costumes you can't wear. And I said, what if you wanted to dress like a nun?
Can you make me a list, Pastor? That's all I need is a list. Tell me which ones I can wear and which ones I can't.
Well, see, that's the point. I refuse to do that kind of stuff. And that's why I'm not going to give you the approved list right now, because people need to think through the stuff. But I said, can someone dress like a nun? Yeah, that's harmless. Can someone dress like a sexy nun? They said, yeah, that's kind of tough. And I said, how about like a knight? And they said, yeah. I said, how about an axe murderer? Probably not. How about like a police officer? Yeah. How about a sexy police officeress? You know, that's, you know, there's a line there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what about vampires? And, of course, some of these girls were really interested in saying, yes, that you can just look at a vampire. And I said,
yeah.
Why is it that every vampire story has some sort of evil presence that attaches it to the human and changes them? And why is it that they have some sort of allergic reaction to light? And I said, when there's better options out there, why settle for something that's not? I suppose we need to take a break.
You think you're getting through?
I hope so. Because, you know, I'll start off the discussion. I'll let them kind of talk it out. Like, we talked about the legalization of marijuana, and we thought through, is it a harmful drug? You know, do people die from marijuana? Is this good for the nation? And we talked about, you know, all the implications of that. But it's cool because at the beginning I started talking, and then at the end they finished the discussions, and they are far more mature with real issues. Blind faith with eyes wide open now.
We're talking with Pastor Mark Femmel of Zion Lutheran Church, Maryland Heights. If you want to join us, our numbers are 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
I'm Dale Meyer. If you're like I am, December will be upon us sooner than expected. We'll find ourselves swamped with things to do at the end of the year. Now is a good time to start planning for year-end charitable gifts. As you do, I hope you will remember Concordia Seminary. Call 314-505-7000 and ask for Janine. 314-505-7000 and ask for Janine.
You can support the ministry of KFUO Radio through a gift annuity. In fact, for a one-time gift of, say, $5,000, you will receive cash payments for life at a guaranteed rate of interest and leave the rest of the remaining value of the annuity to KFUO after the Lord calls you home. If that sounds like a plan for you, contact our gift planning specialist.
Hi, this is Dennis Stortz. Give me a call at 800-844-0524.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
The President of Planned Parenthood has a message for your congressman. She wants your tax dollars to fund nationwide birth control through Obamacare. Cecile Richards says we should fund birth control because it would result in fewer people and save money. Planned Parenthood knows a lot about eliminating people. They're the largest chain of abortion mills in the nation. Here's the real reason Planned Parenthood's pushing this. They make a killing, figuratively and literally, selling abortions. If they can get the government to reimburse them for birth control, many times over their cost, they'll make an obscene profit. The organization already has $1 billion-plus annual budget, and the richer Planned Parenthood gets, the harder it will be to stop abortion.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org. And stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
The Preacher. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The Reverend Billy Graham has celebrated another birthday, turning 92 Sunday. Grandson and fellow evangelist Will Graham says,
health-wise, he's doing pretty well. My grandfather would really like to preach one more time.
And is trying to get strong enough to do so. Indiana Congressman Mike Pence, a potential Republican candidate for president in 2012, says he'll seek guidance from God as he decides his political future. Pence told ABC's This Week,
we're intent on taking the coming weeks to really prayerfully consider that, to wait on the Lord, to seek counsel, and after the first of the year, we'll make a decision.
Iraqi Christians have held Sunday Mass in the church that just a week before was the scene of an attack by Islamic militants that left 58 people dead. The priest at yesterday's Mass told his congregation, "We will pray for those who assaulted our church and shed the blood of our martyrs." I'm Steve Coleman.
If you've been joining me in the afternoons during the past year at KFUO Radio, you may be aware of The Essence. I'm Diane Summers, host of the program, which is changing with the season. As we enter the season of Thanksgiving, I invite you to celebrate some truly great music. Music to uplift, to inspire, to join you to the musical masters past and present. We'll give you 2 hours each weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 as we deepen and expand the definition of the essence of KFUO Radio.
If it's in the headlines, we'll think about it. If it's a topic of conversation at the water cooler, we'll discuss it. If it's something we need to remember, I'll remind you. Hi, this is Dale Meyer, inviting you to hear the Meyer Minute on KFUO Radio. Weekday mornings and afternoons, I'll bring you fresh commentary from a Christian perspective. The Meyer Minute, addressing today's topics the way God sees it on KFUO Radio.
I'm wondering if those of you who are listening to our conversation here with Pastor Mark Femmel are concerned about our young people, the young people in our country, this 16 to 29-year-old group that we mentioned here in this study that we're talking about. The headline on the article is, "Christianity No Longer Looks Like Jesus." And 16 to 29-year-olds are apparently more in play than any time in recent history. And then those of us in the church who go out about the business of doing the things we always do in November, the things we always do in December, the things we always do in the rest of the months of the year. And then you turn around 5 years from now, and some of those 16 to 29-year-olds are gone. They're gone into something else. And I don't sense a real urgency about that. I do believe that the pastors who pastor these parishes, I believe they care about their 16 to 29-year-olds as much as they care about their 35 to 45-year-olds and the rest of them. But there is an assault underway here, and it doesn't seem to me like we have a very strong, powerful response. We're talking with Pastor Mark Femmel, who is a young pastor. He's just in his early 30s here, and he is a pastor at Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. Pastor, are you... Do you have something in place at your church? Do you have something in place in your ministry which is designed to specifically address this deteriorating situation among this demographic? Or am I wrong to even talk about demographics? You know, let's not talk about the older people and the younger people and the parents. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't speak demographically. How do you see it?
Well, if we always do what we've always done, then why isn't it working? You know, Paul didn't always do what was always done. In fact, that's kind of what got Paul in trouble a lot of times. When he would walk back to Jerusalem or sail back to Jerusalem, the people would say, "What are you doing? You know, you're not talking about Moses and the law and circumcision and all this stuff." And Paul had to defend himself. And so if you're trying to champion something that is being done that in a way that hasn't always been done, first off, you got to listen to your critics. Because if you're wrong, or if there's something you're doing wrong, they'll legitimately point it out. But if it's just somebody whining and complaining because you're not doing things the way it's always been done, you got to gently learn how to convince people that it's a new opportunity. So at our church, we have an outreach team. And when I got there 11 months ago, it's almost been a year, I'm excited. Mm. When I got there 11 months ago, there was nothing in place for as far as like a specific outreach team. So I said, let's get an outreach team together. And a bunch of people there stepped up and said, "We want to be involved. You know, we've been so waiting for something like this." And I was so excited. And we came up with a bunch of ideas. And what we did is I got a big old dry erase board on the wall, which I love dry erase boards. And
look like a dry erase board guy to me. Yeah, I can see that.
And so I started, because I'm big and pasty white, or what?
No, I can just see you. I can just see you all over that dry erase board, making columns and rows and writing it all down. Yeah, I can see that.
Pictures, arrows, it's great, and little drawings. But so I said, let's write down everybody that we see in the grocery store and on the street and walk in and in our cars that we don't see on Sunday morning, that we don't specifically reach. And so we listed a whole bunch of people. And so we started listing, and when we got the whole board filled up, I said, "Now we can't get everybody yet, but let's find out who's out there and what needs they have, and what ways that they need to hear the gospel." And it was a great conversation because we really nailed down some new opportunities.
Probably a little bit outside the normal rhythm of Zion Lutheran Church in Maryland Heights. You don't want to upset the rhythm too much there, Pastor.
Well, like Zion, the congregation I'm called to, we just want to follow Jesus. And if Jesus is calling us to a specific case, then
wow, you're flexible.
Let's do it.
Very impressive. I can't help but think that there's somebody listening to us right now who has a 16 or 17-year-old kid. And they don't... In most cases, they don't need to be told by Chuck on the Bible study that Barna has a study out and the headline is "Christianity No Longer Looks Like Jesus." They already know the pressures are coming, and they're already concerned. They don't need you and me to tell them about that. Call us if you are walking that walk. 505-780-1800-730-2727. David has called in. Hi, David. You're on the Bible study.
Hello there. Just my perspective. There's a scripture in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 22. It's very interesting. It says, "If anyone does not love the Lord Jesus Christ, let him be accursed. O Lord, come." And what I sense here is, whether you're teenagers, 20, 30, 40, you can't force Christianity on people per se. You can try to reason with them, but what I sense is a lot of apathy out there, and that people generally just don't care whether you're 20, 25, or older. And it's something like we're almost trying to convince people, are trying to, you know, why don't you get yourself in a right condition with God? Well, a lot of people just don't care, and it hurts. I see that in my own family. It's more of an apathetic. We're in this electronic age. I got my computer, my TV. I've got a boyfriend. I've got a car. I don't need God. And that's just my sense. So maybe you can think about what I said and just talk about that for a while.
All right. Thanks for the call. Pastor, any comments?
David, I mean, you're spot on. And, you know, you look at the things that people do love. They love their computers, their boyfriend or girlfriend. They love their cars. They love, you know, their friends at school. But you look at what they like. They don't like vegetables because vegetables don't taste good. Now, they're really good for you, but they just don't taste good. You know, I don't like taxes. Of course, if I stop paying taxes, then, you know, who knows who will come and bomb my house and rape and kill my kids. You know, so...
Well, I don't know it'd be that severe, Pastor, but somebody probably would knock on your door eventually.
If we don't have police or military, anybody protecting us, I mean, it's anarchy.
Oh, I see.
You know?
I see.
So with my eye on that, I say, all right, it's time to pay taxes. With my eye on that kind of stuff, I say, well, you know, I sure would like a big old bowl of ice cream, but I guess I'll take a salad. People don't like Jesus. A lot of people don't like Jesus. That's because,
why?
Well, that's because when they see Jesus, they see someone who's homophobic, someone who is judgmental, someone who doesn't care. They just want to talk. They don't want to listen. They just want to talk and tell you what's wrong with you and why you should be like us. And he's always asking for 10% or something like that. When actually meet Jesus, if we actually let people see Jesus as we see Jesus, as one who loves us, is always taking care of us, is always watching over us, is always helping us, is always taking care of us, and always being involved in us in every way, specifically, if we show them specifics, they will fall in love with Jesus so much. And that's our responsibility as Christians.
It's interesting, since you haven't seen this story, I just brought it to the table here this morning, but it says here in the story, common negative perceptions among non-Christians is that present-day Christianity is, and this almost goes right down the line of what you just said, judgmental, 87% responding, hypocritical, 85% responding, old-fashioned, 78% responding, and too involved in politics, the one that you didn't name, mm-hmm. named by 75% of the people in the survey. That's a pretty tall mountain to climb over, Pastor. If people have already judged you to be these things just because you say, yes, I'm a Christian, that makes it tough, I think.
Yeah, and especially if we start saying the things they already think a Christian's going to say. You know, and so... You know, the classic example is homosexuality. So if you talk to someone who struggles with homosexuality and you start telling them, you know, the Bible doesn't like homosexuality, it calls it disgusting, it calls it abomination, it calls it displeasing, it calls it dirty, it calls it unclean. Well, it's not like you're saying something they haven't heard before. But if you as a Christian walk up to somebody who's struggling with homosexuality or kleptomania or losing their temper or being a workaholic, if you walk up to them and you say, you know, there is someone who is so invested in you that no matter what problem you have, he's ready to take care of you. He's ready to watch over you. And so they, you know, they throw out their little examples, you know, like, you know, I got a car repair or, you know, such and such, or, you know, this person really wronged me and I don't want to forgive them. You show them how Jesus would help you with that situation. Show them how Jesus would help you if you had the struggles that they had. And then at that point they say, wow, Jesus is actually worth knowing. And here's the deal. And this is why I say that a lot of congregations and a lot of people just focus on after you die, because that we got easy. How do you talk to somebody about not cohabiting? How do you talk to somebody about not speeding? How do you talk to somebody about taking time off from work and not being a workaholic? Well, if you don't have the skills and abilities to do that, talk to your pastor and say, what would you think about a Bible study on this? Or what would you think about how would you help me talk to somebody about this topic? You know, your local pastor is a tremendous resource. And so if you found somebody that is difficult to figure out the way in or how they need to see Jesus, go talk to your pastor or a mature brother or sister in the faith and ask them how they would help somebody, and you'll find your answer.
One more point from this particular article. It says, among other common impressions, 23% of young non-Christians said, quote, Christianity has changed from what it used to be, and Christianity in today's society no longer looks like Jesus. Where do you think those assessments are coming? This is a minority view, about 1 out of 4, not like the 85 and 87% we were talking about before, but where do you think those impressions are coming from, Pastor?
Well, because if you're not a Christian, you don't see that we pass the plates and we support charities. If you're not a Christian, you don't see all the Christians that show up to help out with Habitat for Humanity. If you're not a Christian, you don't see all the families that every congregation is involved in helping. If you're not a Christian, you don't see all the forgiveness and the love and the kindness and the awesome virtues that are held up by Christ and therefore congregations. All you see are the things that the news tells you, and all you're doing is you're looking from the outside in. And if the only books people are reading are like the Da Vinci Code, well, they are going to be so clueless as far as actual history and what real Christians do, because they're just looking at the tabloids.
I want to change the subject here, because I see that our time is beginning to run short. You familiar with Tim Tebow?
Yeah, I'm not a...
quarterback, not a football guy?
Not a big sports fan.
Ah. Well, he is a first-round draft pick, very successful football player, college football player, now on the roster of the Denver Broncos. He was celebrated. I don't know if that's the right term. It was noted in the media that he was a man of faith and that he was not afraid to talk about his faith. Sometimes wore eye black kind of things under his eye during the game.
With the white verses.
Scripture verses on them. And now he's in the NFL. He's in his rookie year. So I guess he's probably 23, just a little younger than you. There's a story out of New York today that the former Heisman Trophy winner is working on an inspirational memoir. Now, I'm a big fan of Tim Tebow. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to... he's been ripped by plenty of people because he's allowed his faith to be part of who he is in his public life. It says Tebow is collaborating with Nathan Whitaker on a book titled Through My Eyes, and scheduled to come out in April. HarperCollins announced the book today. The former University of Florida quarterback was drafted by the Denver Broncos. He has played in 4 games so far, and he has scored 2 touchdowns in 10 carries of the football. He has 10 carries, Pastor. But he has yet to throw a pass in a regular season game. He's yet to perform the duties of a quarterback. In a statement released by HarperCollins, the 23-year-old Tebow said his book would be a story of, quote, faith, family, and football, unquote, and inspiring people to fulfill their dreams. And I'm thinking, oh no, Tim, they're exploiting you. You've played 4 games, carried the ball 10 times in the NFL. Maybe before you want to write a memoir, you want to carry the ball maybe 20 times, maybe get like 1 full season under your belt before you write a book. But somebody obviously feels that if they can get Tim Tebow to write a book, they'll be able to sell a lot of them and make some money. Now, on the other hand, you might say, Chuck, you just got done talking about how all these young people are all headed south. They're all out of the church. They don't like Christianity. Here's a guy who has made his faith part of his public life and is a popular guy. This is just the antidote for the stuff that you've been whining about for the last 45 minutes. Which of those two, or pick your own, do you want to run with regarding Tim Tebow?
Well, certainly people who publish books get paid when they publish books that sell. And so if, you know, they obviously have a motivation to do it, but, you know, if Tebow waits to write his book and he gets injured in his 9th game, then, and that's like a career-ending injury, well, then Tebow kind of missed his chance. So I say, Tebow, go write your book. Make sure it's focused on Jesus as opposed to, you know, an occasional reference to, you know, you showing up at church. But, you know, do it, sell it. And then when you've been in the season for 5 years, write another book talking about how the difficulties and the blessings that it is to be a Christian in the NFL. You know, and just go through it. You know, but what I would say is don't do what Mel Gibson did. As soon as you become a champion of the faith, do something stupid that ridicules everything you've done.
The devil has probably got his Tim Tebow move all lined up here after this book debuts. Well, but
you know, and if you know, Satan's already got his contingency plans in place. But Tim Tebow, don't do what Mel Gibson did and constantly vilify yourself.
I guess I'm just a, unfortunately, just kind of a skeptical guy. Writing a book at age 23 or whatever he is, with not too terribly much NFL experience behind him, certainly a noteworthy college career, almost looks a little too commercial to me. Maybe I'm just a grizzled old cynic.
Look at the competition, though. Justin Bieber, who I don't know if he's particularly religious or not, he's getting his own movie. How long has he been a star? A week? You know? So, you know, the competition's out there. The a-religious, the not particularly religious.
I don't know too much about
Justin
Bieber. Is he a Christian?
No idea. But it's going to be about, he's coming out with a movie talking about how, and it's called Never Say Never, and about how you too can do it. You can be famous and successful and just like me. And it's like, you know, if everybody were famous, then nobody would be buying your CD. So,
well, you know, you don't have to work too hard if you go to Google to find the long trail of debris of child stars and young people who have sort of been commercialized by some of the older of us and then pretty much left in a crumpled heap after they're done with them. So I hope that doesn't happen to Justin Bieber, whether he's a Christian or not. But I wonder if there aren't forces in the culture who will love to get a hold of Tim Tebow's book and savage the daylights out of him, particularly if he brings up the J word, if he starts talking about Jesus. Is that a wise move, do you think, Pastor, as a Christian person, Tim Tebow is a Christian person, to put yourself out there, lay that out, like when you know people are going to try to tear it apart?
Well, they're doing that anyway, aren't they?
You know, they've been agitated about it, but
I've heard Christians come up to me and say, isn't it sinful that Tebow has those Bible verses on his eyes?
Then what do you say?
Well, they'll say because he's it's like those people standing on the street corners raising their hands and showing off their faith and saying, look at me, I'm a Christian. And I said, I don't think that's why he's doing it. I think that's him giving the credit line to everything he's doing. Glory to God. And they said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, you know, after all the pressure of everybody attacking him, he still does it. So I don't think he's doing it to pat himself on the back. He's doing it to give glory to God.
Well,
so,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to change subject there, so if you want to finish that thought.
Well, it's your radio show.
Let's go to Baghdad.
All right.
I don't know if you follow the news very carefully or not. Iraqi Christians held a Sunday mass in the church that just a week before was the scene of a horrific bloodbath in which dozens of people died. Parishioners gathered in Baghdad's Our Lady of Salvation Church, which still bore bullet holes along its walls and bloodstains on its chandeliers and ceilings. Islamic militants took about 120 parishioners hostage the previous Sunday. By the end of the evening, 58 people were dead, including two priests. The priest who led yesterday's mass told the congregation, quote, "We will pray for those who assaulted our church and shed the blood of our martyrs," unquote. Do you think, Pastor, that if you lost loved ones among 58 people whose blood and the violence of which somehow scattered the blood into the chandeliers and the ceiling of the sanctuary there, do you really think that you could pray for the people who assaulted and murdered those 58 in Baghdad?
If Jesus could love me so much after I murder him every time I sin, As grisly as this crime is, yeah.
Well, God bless you, sir. But I have to ask myself, if you think about a dozen people that you know, with whom you have affiliations or acquaintances, maybe even some people who are close to you, and they were murdered down in a house of, or shot down in a house of worship, in such a way that the violence left behind is apparent. Pray for those who assaulted our church. Man, I think that's one of those things that it's easy to nod and say, oh, yes, amen, on this side of the event, but if it actually happened to me, I'm not sure I could do it.
Well, two things. God never gives you the grace for things that you might one day possibly in some situations face. He gives you the grace to endure the things you actually do. So, Chuck, if somebody came in here and killed everybody else at KFUO today, except for you, God's grace would bolster you up to make the good confession. The second thing, if you're praying for them, you're not praying for them to be, you're not praying for their physical well-being or for their financial prosperity or for their safety at home, but they're also not praying for them to, you know, be shot in the head and slowly bleed to death. They're praying that they would learn the error from their ways, that they would not do so again, and that God would prevent them from harming more people to their own detriment, and that they too would turn away from the religion of Islam, which sure after sure drives them to do that.
I would like to think that if I found myself in the place of this priest who prayed the way he did, that I would not pray ill will. Father, let's call down fire from heaven.
God, give us guns.
Yeah. But, you know, you see from time to time, you see people in the news who have experienced something like this here in our own country. They have, their family is wiped out or something by some terrible person. Or they're coming out of a courtroom where a judgment has just been rendered, maybe severe against the perpetrator. Maybe the perpetrator got off. And they don't usually say, well, we're thanking God, we're just praying. They don't usually talk like that. They're usually hurt and devastated, and in most cases, restraining the anger and the bitterness, the contempt they may be feeling. I think we consider that high moral ground if they're able to restrain it. But for this man over in Baghdad to pray as he did, I find that to be a remarkable thing. It's easy to talk about it, but this man did it. And I was just looking for your reaction as to what you see in the guy who did this, who took this road.
Yeah, in each of our lives, we have every daily opportunities to follow Jesus at all costs or not.
Not like this one.
Not like this one.
Not like this one.
Not like this one.
Little ones, maybe.
But imagine if you're actually driving around and it's cold outside and you see a guy, you know, like without a shirt or standing there in a t-shirt and, you know, a pair of shorts, and he's clearly in need of a coat, and you've got your coat and your heater in your car. If you give him your coat, you're going to be cold, Chuck. You're going to be cold, and you're going to be uncomfortable, and you might have to, like, run into your house and make a special trip to get another coat. And then you got to buy another coat, and, you know, there's change in this pocket, and, oh, I like the way that this one feels, you know, I don't like my backup coat. But, you know, if you gave him an opportunity for, hey, here's my coat, even though that costs you $60, $80, $150, that's miraculous. And that is your opportunity to do what this priest has done in your daily life. And Chuck, if people see that 3% that has a favorable view,
yeah,
will become 100%. And people will flock to
Good
Christ
point.
Because they see him as he is in us.
Good point. You ended right on the money there, Pastor. Pastor Mark Femmel, Zion Lutheran Church, Maryland Heights. Thank you, sir.
My privilege.
You tied it all together in a way that I couldn't even have tried to do. We continue in the Gospel of Matthew tomorrow on the Bible Study. Join us then.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on the Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study Archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.